You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, as Donald Trump is trailing Hillary Clinton by a wide margin in Wisconsin, a new group calling itself Wisconsin Women for Trump are hoping to change that. We'll take a look at what Donald Trump needs to do to win in Wisconsin.
First, our next guest has been tracking social movements around the country, from the birth of the Tea Party to Occupy Wall Street and the Act 10 protests here in Wisconsin. She says the U.S. is seeing a spike in social activism that has the power to remake politics and the world as we know it.
Sarah Jaffe joins us now. She's a Nation Institute fellow and an independent journalist. Her new book is called Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. Sarah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've been following social movements as they spring up around the country, movements on the left like Occupy Wall Street and also movements on the right like the Tea Party, along with Black Lives Matter and the Fight for 15 and the protests after Act 10. And you say that they seem different, but they have a lot in common. How would you describe that common ground between them?
You know, I think the thing that they have in common is that Americans are feeling like elites have failed them. The people who are supposed to know what's going on and be in charge are not doing a very good job of it, and that we have to do something about it. And that doing something is more than just voting. It's people getting out in the streets, in the occupying the Wisconsin Capitol, and disrupting business as usual in order to make their demands heard.
Do you think these groups perceive that what you're saying, that they may have things in common? Someone like a man you interviewed who became a Tea Party activist, J.D. Meadows, that he has something in common with the Occupy Wall Street folks?
I mean, I didn't talk to him. I actually tried to find J.D. Meadows, and I could not track him back down. So if he happens to be listening, I would love to interview him. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him after Occupy to find out what he thought. I really wanted to. But there are certainly people that I did talk to, like Debbie Dooley, who is a Tea Party activist and also part of something called the Green Tea Party, because she is for solar power in particular and concerns about environmental issues in general. And she did express that she had some things in common with people, and indeed the Atlanta Tea Party had worked on a protest with some labor unions and with Occupy people when an anti-protesting bill was put forward by the Georgia State Legislature.
And it seems like since 2008, I guess, the financial collapse, there has been a spike in social and political activism. How would you describe what's going on that is fueling all of these different movements that we keep seeing year after year?
You know, I think that the financial crisis was a big moment in world history. I think we'll look back on it and go, wow, this is when things really changed. And, you know, what happened in that moment was we really saw a crisis in the political economic system that we're used to living under. You know, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, it had been, you know, capitalism is the only way, everything else fails. And then capitalism kind of almost failed. And so that's a big shock to people who are used to that being just the way things are.
I mean, we saw a lot of social ferment and social and political movements in the 60s. It hasn't been as prevalent as that since then. So looking back in history, do you see any parallels with the moment that we're living in right now and other areas that might look similar in the rearview mirror?
You know, I mean, I think there are a lot of things in common with the 60s, obviously, but I really do look at the Depression more than the 60s in this moment because, as somebody was saying to me earlier today, the economy was pretty good in the 50s and 60s when the civil rights movement and other protests started. And really, you know, the shock of the Depression was that the economy had collapsed and that people were really struggling. And we're not quite at those conditions now, and so the problem with that is it almost leads people to complacency. If you're doing okay, it's easy to sort of not notice the people who are still struggling. And then, you know, we get election season and we get Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump and people are like, why are people so angry? I didn't realize people were still angry. And it's like if you, you know, outside of a few centers of media where most of the election reporting comes from, people are mad and people are still doing things about it.
What is different about the protests we're seeing today? I know one word you use to describe them is horizontal. You want to tell us about that and what else is different?
Yeah, I think the horizontal structure, which is basically a leaderless, a sort of broad structure where a lot of people take power within the movement, which is something that we saw in the way the Tea Party spread as well. This is both a reaction to a moment where Americans feel like elites have failed them and also a part and parcel of the way that these things are spreading, because they're spreading via the internet, right? People are sort of replicating something that they see somewhere else. And so these things spread very quickly rather than waiting for, you know, this leader or that leader to come to your city and have, you know, have a big march. You go organize your own march.
Sarah Jaffe is with us now. She's the author of a new book called Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. And we're talking about the rise of protest movements, social movements in the United States. And Sarah, you write about Wisconsin during the Act 10 protests. And you say that those protests were pioneering in one way, in particular the way they use social media. What stood out to you there?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of things, actually. I think that the Wisconsin protests also sort of pioneered the kinds of occupations that we've now seen repeat in several of these protests. But also, you know, in terms of the use of social media, Wisconsin, I was in New York and I was watching this on Twitter. The people that I interviewed for the book are people that I met, quote, met in air quotes on Twitter during the protests. I watched in real time as this stuff was happening, as the major media outlets were kind of ignoring this until it got too big to ignore. And so, you know, there was Twitter, there was Facebook, there were Facebook groups used to organize. You know, people around the world were communicating via Twitter. I think it was, everybody kind of forgets that this was going on at the same time as the revolution in Egypt. And there was, I remember so clearly the famous moment where the pizza shop had a pizza called in from Egypt, and it was so exciting. And so, yeah, we saw that. And then, like, as social media has evolved, it was only a few months later that Occupy Wall Street started. But by then, live streaming technology had already improved, and people were really live streaming video straight from their smartphones as things were going on.
And you, in your book, you argue that these movements do have the power to transform society, to affect political and policy change. But, you know, if you look at the protests in Wisconsin, Act 10, you could bill them as a failure. Governor Walker wasn't recalled. Act 10 is still in place. So what is your take? Is there momentum in these movements, even if they don't achieve their objectives at the time?
I mean, I think there is. I think that these things, you know, it's also easy to have, like, too rosy a picture, and I don't want to, you know, pretend that, right, we saw at peak maybe 100,000 people come out in Madison, and Scott Walker survived recall and then was reelected. He notably did not do so well on the presidential campaign trail this year, but, yeah, these things take a while, and it can be really hard. You know, one of the people that I spoke to in my book, Alex Hanna, she really hasn't been active since. It's really hard to sort of recover from these things. And so that's kind of a downside, is that these very, very intense, very disruptive protests that entail often a lot of risk really do, you know, take a lot out of people. And so, you know, we have to think about that as well as the upside. That said, I think that Wisconsin laid the groundwork for Occupy Wall Street. It laid the groundwork for occupations that we're seeing now with the Black Lives Matter movement, where you see the same kinds of structures where people are making child care centers and art centers and have libraries and things while they're camping out and holding public space.
Now, you talked about the common ground between these various movements, and I can see that as a vulnerability, that there are a lot of movements right now that are active and not a lot of coordination between them. Is that a liability when you have too many that it's difficult to get a spotlight shine for too long on any one of them?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of coordination going on that doesn't get reported, because reporting tends to be short-term and tends to be immediate. And so, you know, you have a bunch of reporters go to Ferguson when there are massive, massive protests in the streets, and most of those reporters aren't there now. Even though the people who are there are still doing work, they're still organizing, they're still crossing over with other things. So with, like, the Fight for 15, they're communicating with people in other cities, they're really building. And you saw that with the Vision for Black Lives platform that just came out a couple of weeks ago, where 50 different organizations that are involved with the Movement for Black Lives came together and spent a year working on a really, really expansive visionary policy document that, you know, yeah, we didn't think that these people were coordinating with each other. We have very obvious proof that they are, and they're working really hard on it. And that document does include issues like climate change. It includes wages. It includes a moratorium on charter schools. it's a really expansive vision that takes into account a lot of the other issues that have been raised by a lot of these other movements today.
Now, you mentioned the election cycle that we're in now that surprised some people quite a bit, both with the rise of Bernie Sanders and the rise of Donald Trump. Do you expect to see more protest movements, social movements spinning out from the cycle, that it's revealed something that we didn't know was there in a way?
I mean, I think we're going to see more because things have not gotten better, and I don't see a whole lot on offer from the current presidential candidates, either of them, that really takes on the issues at the root of the problem. You know, Donald Trump is talking a pretty good game, so is Hillary Clinton at times, but there's still a lot of frustration. Both of these candidates, while they won their primaries, are vastly unpopular with large swaths of the country. And so, you know, I don't see either of them restoring Americans' faith in authority anytime soon.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Jaffe. She's the author of the new book, Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. And she joined us to talk about the rise of social movements and protest movements in the United States.
Coming up, we'll take a look at Donald Trump's standing in Wisconsin, particularly among women. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.